where are we at? Episode 42. You know, I never really like have a proper way to sing this one in, so we're just going to be singing it in like this way, because I think it's five. So welcome to the Bus Driver Experience, episode 42. Great show we have today. This is a return guest, but not a return guest from the Bus Driver Experience, from the first podcast on the Bus Podcast series. We are joined by Ian Marco. I've known Ian long time. Ian and I grew up playing basketball against each other down in South Florida. I reconnected with Ian via our buddy Colby Wallab out in New York. Shout out to Colby. What a legend. Ian is a fitness trainer, and he teaches Kinstretch. He currently teaches and coaches in Miami. He has virtual platforms and programs, and I really enjoy his work. He has some incredible exercises, and he really, I'm pretty sure I got this mantra from him. I don't know where else would I've got it from, but it is strength through movement. And as over the years, I've transitioned away from being a professional athlete, but still wanting to take care of my body, that is just, you know, I've put it through the ringer, but how can I how can I live a healthy and beneficial life without being in pain while still being able to demand and deliver high optimal performances out of my body when I wanted to hit sports field? So really go check out some of his work. He has a lot of online programmings. If you are a trainer, you're interested in a lot of this Kinstretch programs, as well as different mobility movement modalities. He's got some great videos. There'll be links to his content for Instagram and YouTube. And yeah, get your notepads and pens and papers out. There's a lot of good content here. And enjoy the show with my buddy Ian Marco.
Okay.
Ian Marco, what's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. I'm really excited to be here. Part two. Here we go.
Part two. Well, even that first part one was part of a different show. So, this is, new part one right here. So.
All right. Well, that's even more exciting.
Right? I mean, last time I saw you, we were in New York. We were both living in New York. We both relocated since then. You're down in Miami now. How much are you loving Miami?
You know, I like some things. I don't like other things. The heat's obviously pretty crappy, especially compared to California. But the space in the apartment, going to the beach instead of the seaport, is pretty cool. But some of the stereotypes about Miami are pretty true. People tend to be late. The women are very beautiful, and it's definitely hot as hell.
I think everybody's late everywhere, man. Like, that's just the thing. Even in New York, it was excusable. It's like, the train, traffic, I couldn't get on here, the taxis, it was a pain in the ass. But, I mean, even California, you bring the East Coast work ethic out here. People are like, why do you work so hard, man? Why do you want to do that? So it's been interesting, but yeah, man, that's the one difference with it's weather and temperature from out here to back to home. I've heard everybody be complaining this summer about how hot it is down there.
Yeah, it is. It's crazy. It's almost like, we grew up in this, mm-hmm. but it's almost like you forgot. You're like, really? Was it really that bad when I was younger?
So that's like something I measure it to. I remember I used to, Remember, I used to have like a chain back in high school. You know, we used to, back in our basketball days.
Yeah. No explanation needed for me, I know.
I won't even go any deeper than that. I think people get enough picture. I know you do it. Yeah. So, yeah, like I think I had like a Michael Jordan logo on a chain on the neck.
Right.
But I remember, wearing it as younger than I was 16 and having my own car and then getting in the car and literally remember being jewelry getting so hot that I couldn't wear it on my body. It was like, holy shit, I got to take this off, before your car cooled down and you sat in it. So, I don't know if that's a proper measure of global warming or things getting hotter, but I remember having that problem as a kid compared to now. But yeah, man, that Florida heat, that humidity, even though we chopped down most of the Everglades and the jungles that were there before we moved down there or before people came in, like It's disgusting. It is
Yeah,
some
it really
disgusting
can
heat.
be.
I mean, I had to tell people, you better be wearing two shirts, you know, bring a change of clothes in your car, three sticks of deodorant. Like, you gotta kind of gotta leave like a little mini house in your car, and you need a car
Absolutely.
to get around down there, man.
Yeah, you can't walk.
That's the one sacrifice I miss about New York. You
Me
know,
too.
public transportation, man.
Amen.
I know you're a big bike rider, but where are you working out of now down in Miami? Where are you staying there?
So I work out of a place called Train Fuerte. So it's a gym owned by my friend Samuel Simpson. And I'm not really doing too much in person, especially now with COVID. But the few hours a week that I do work in person training are going to be out of there. And then for our new Elite Video membership, which is like our online classes, we film out of there. So if anybody's seen that, that's kind of the spot that I'm talking about.
Okay, nice. Where in Miami is that?
So I live in Edgewater, and this is like just north on 70th and Biscayne. So it's basically like, not on the beach, but across from the beach, basically.
Yeah, I know exactly where you are. Edgewater is nice. I have a bunch of friends that live there. I stay out there when I go when I do
Yeah.
visit. It's been rare that I visit South Florida, but great spot in town right there, man.
Yeah, it's great. A lot of good food. You can really walk. I love Wynwood, man. Wynwood have that culture, the art. Love that.
Yeah, people don't really know that's like a prime street art capital of the world. Like,
Absolutely.
you ask some graffiti artists and stuff, like, I'll throw that one in their top five. But of course, it's like anything once you're living in it. Like, how we lived in New York, I've got to live in LA now, I'm living in Miami. It's like, don't sometimes appreciate it, but I'm glad you're getting out there and
100%, yeah.
soaking it in. But damn, man, it's got to be nuts. I mean, I've the past 2 months of shows during all this COVID, I've talked with, you know, different fitness, health professionals, you know, from people working public health, CDC, biologists, you know, fitness coaches, trainers, and more in the area with you with like fitness coaching. You know, it's really interesting watching, you know, you guys evolve into training people, whether it's going to be over a Zoom call or training them, you know, with the classes that you were already doing. I think that was like a big move in the space. Is having, you know, that remote setup, being able to have your classes and everything. So once something like this hit, it wasn't as detrimental to your pocket as well as your business. So how are you doing with all that? And, you know, what's going on with Marco Training?
Honestly, we were very fortunate. The reason I moved down to Miami was to get with my brother, who's my business partner, who does, photography, videography, and he's really expanded into marketing and done a really good job out learning all kinds of new stuff. So we were really ahead of the curve, man, and we got really lucky. Our business actually increased when COVID went up. So we were one of the fortunate people who already had systems in place to really deal with it. So in terms of like, online training was already going on. I got even more clients there. We already had it was being built, and then it launched pretty much around when COVID came for other trainers to learn, which is called Mobility Coach Plus. And then we were in the process of creating what we have now is the EVM, which is our subscription model that is a monthly subscription that you do classes. So, like I said, man, really grateful that we had kind of got ahead of the curve and realized that financial freedom was the goal. And not getting kind of trapped in that 40-hour a week of trainer life, which so many people are unfortunately stuck in, and then probably even suffering right now because of what happened with COVID,
Yeah, well, I think our entire system is still built around, you know, 40-hour work weeks, in-person style, you know, business or, you know, this exchange economy that we work in. Like, but, you know, those of us who were able to pivot and move, like, I was grateful and lucky myself to have, you know, remote editing gigs and content gigs or, you know, managing and producing podcasts from here where I'm recording this show now. It was like just, oh man, I'm glad I put that 3 years in of suffering and like building up to this point to say,
Absolutely. Me
you know,
too.
so grateful for that. And yeah, but I know your whole entire program is not just teaching people how to move better, how to gain more strength in their movement and mobility, but you know, you also teach like an online class or like you teach people how to make this you know, stretching kin stretch business.
Yeah. So I do. One of the things that I started adding because of COVID was kind of like almost like a little side thing that I don't even really advertise for, but it just kind of comes up. And it's basically just mentoring people within the Mobility Coach Plus course. You get 2 video calls with me. So we kind of talk most of the time is spent on like the actual science behind stuff, because that's what people need. But I do offer the idea that we can talk about business and help in that way. But I've started recently just getting a lot of people reaching out to do business calls with me. So I'll like, you know, not even super structured, just a quick 30-minute call. You tell me what you need help with. I tell you how I would approach it. And then they kind of just put it together, and then they reach back out when they need help again. Long term, I think we'll create a full course and like everything that really details everything that we're talking about. But for now, it's really worked really well. And it's cool because it's such a small commitment, you know, like 30 minutes on my end, 30 minutes on their end. It's not a lot of money. They're able to just kind of get on there and just specifically talk about what they need. And I just share my experience with them. I actually just got off a call doing that. So that's been really helpful for a lot of people, because of the idea of, like we said, you know, where you're at right now. If you didn't start making steps to really go into some sort of passive income or at least some sort of remote income, then, man, you're behind the game and you should have started a long time ago, but better late than never, you know?
Yeah. Everybody's behind on that. Our whole education system, I think the fitness industry itself was like way behind that. And, you know, my favorite part, it's a pretty out there statement. I was going to say my favorite part about COVID, you know, but the most interesting thing is the hearing the people make the excuses. Well, the government's trying to keep me in my home and I can't get out and exercise, or I can't go out and prove myself. And it's like, yeah, there are people who have extenuating circumstances who can't do X, Y, or Z, but like you can't go out and get some sunlight and get some exercise. Like I didn't understand that one. Just like you're using the government for an excuse about not being healthy and in shape. Like, come on.
I'm not put a mask on and go for a walk. Like, nobody's gonna arrest you when you do that. Like, you'll be all right.
I mean, we're originally Floridians, and it's been amazing to watch Florida just basically take on the entire country.
it's embarrassing sometimes, for sure.
It's embarrassing. I'm a proud Floridian, you know. I want people to know that. Proud, you know. I throw my Florida flag up. I rep it strong. But, you know, I like kind of just, you know, put my head down sometimes. Just like, oh, God. And now the United States has become Florida. I really feel like we've just really just swallowed the United States.
But you did. I'm just going to silently nod in agreement.
Everybody knows what it's like to be a Floridian now. This is it, guys. This is it. Let's go more into your program and your kind of everything you worked on. Then more of like, you know, where the fitness industry is. I think we were just talking about it now, and trends that the industry is moving towards. You know, it's growing up and coming up. You know, I remember the longest time, you got to be look a certain way, you got to be a certain way. And yeah, you know, for me, as long as I've gone on my fitness journey, it's been, you know, nuts to say, okay, remember being in college and I got to play these 200-pound point guards, and I'm 175, ran a 4.340, but I got shin splints. My hamstrings in my lower back are just mangled. I can't lift my hips up to the 90-degree marker, like to even get out of a car. It's like, you know, as of now, people have gotten a lot leaner. Everybody's pushing, you know, mobility, being able to move. I still think we kind of live in a bubble in terms of not everybody is like that, and not everybody still thinks that way. It's like people, you know, the podcast and the space of people with passive income. But, you know, is this something that's getting bigger into the space, and how long have you been working on this stuff, and what is it that specifically that you cover?
Yeah, so mobility training, for anybody that doesn't know, just the simplest way to say it is really just strength training for your joints. And, you know, what happened is when the industry, you know, was created, and then it was, you know, built and brought along, you know, the idea of really being huge on how you look, muscle, a lot of people will still tell you like push, pull, carry, like basically there's these 6 basic movements that everybody needs. But when you actually look at the complexity of movement, whether we're talking about running, doing sports, something like doing a snatch, I mean, these are just such complex movements that really are not just patterns, but they're representations of all these individual units being able to do their job. So that's kind of what mobility training comes down to. So simply put, if I'm going to snatch something, I better make sure that my hip can do what my hip needs to do to snatch. My shoulder should be able to do what it needs to do, and same for the ankle and the rest of the things that are involved. So I think as a whole, you know, with the science being, you know, put out there, with more people being involved in learning this stuff, but even more importantly, more people, like you said, getting hurt. Pain is a normal thing. It's something statistically that everybody's going to really kind of encounter at one point or another. But that doesn't mean it's something that you should accept. It's something that can be changed. It's something that can be avoided. Maybe if it's not 100%, there's a huge difference between your back being a little sore after we go and run for two and a half hours playing ball, and you actually not being able to walk the next day. So like that's a really good example of like, yeah, I pushed it to the limit, but I didn't suffer for weeks after, which I think really happens a lot, especially in sports. So, as we're moving forward, I think it's getting a lot better. I think a lot of people are really understanding that. But like you said, we're in a bubble, and I'm definitely biased towards that. There's still a lot of people that don't understand that, but that's why there's great opportunities like this to come on here and really explain that. One of the big things that I know we mentioned is the idea of like, what's the difference between mobility and flexibility? Now, it's really just semantics. If you wanted to say active flexibility, that could be the same thing as mobility. But essentially, if I pull myself into a position, so if I lift my arm with my other arm, that's going to be passive. If I take my arm away and I actually use my arm to really move it, that's going to be active. So when we talk about usable range of motion, which is one of the big things that FRC and Kinstretch have really kind of defined, is the idea that when you leave, you're not required to have a machine there to put you in place. You're not required to have someone else stretching you into that position. When you go run and you got to do hurdles, if you can't get your hip up there to jump over that thing, you are going to run right into that hurdle and fall on your face. So that's kind of like the simplest way to think of mobility and flexibility.
Yeah, the real world application, I think, is something that people get away from, or they either don't actually go out and figure it out, or someone's not there, such as yourself, to design them these workouts. With through basketball, I'm lucky to have worked with trainers who are like, oh, hey, you're going to be a basketball player. We're going to work on X, Y, Z to get you better. And then, still working into this time, to understand my body enough and the science enough to study and look at it. To, I think like the craziest one is the non-contact ACL injury, is like the one that happens the most still. As much as science is getting better and athletes are getting quicker and stronger, like it almost seems like our bodies, like most things, like the way technology is moving these days, our bodies aren't adapting fast enough to the change that we're trying to force on it. And our bodies can't handle it. And then I actually had this podiatrist on. He's massive gung-ho on the barefoot movement. He's actually a Miami guy as well, Jeff Shube. And he sent me a report about it kind of being the relay between the nerve receptors and the bottom of the foot, and people not being barefoot enough, or having the proper mental mapping that the brain and the feet work together on, that there's a correlation between that. I'm not saying that's a for sure, but we'll say it's an interesting theory for now.
Absolutely, dude. I mean, if you go to work right now and whether you're on Zoom or you're typing or doing something, if I put gloves on your hands, you're going to be pissed. Like 10 minutes into work, you're going to be like, yo, Ian, I'm taking these off. I don't want to do that. So like, if you think about the way that your feet work, like you're saying, there's basically a feedback loop from the sensory input that your feet are getting. It sends it back up to your brain, and then your brain responds with an appropriate action. So if there is the connections either poor or in most cases non-existent, like for example, if you're at home right now, you look down at your foot and you try to lift just your big toe. If all of your toes move, or you don't move any of them at all, guess what? Things aren't really working that well. So, like he's saying, being barefoot is a really great way. One of the things that I add as a simple solution would be either A, move your toes, lift the big toe only, lift all the other ones, with independently, lift all of them, do piano, so little toe, second toe, third toe, like all the way through systematically. Or you can just get barefoot, brushing your teeth. Every single person that's healthy right now is brushing their teeth. Stand on one foot when you do it. We're biased to our right side because of our asymmetrical anatomy. So stand on your left foot more if you want and be a little bit more specific. But like, there's little easy things that you can do like that really do make a huge difference in the long term.
Tremendously. I'm glad you're a barefoot guy. And do you do most of your workouts, or even when you're training people, the view in person you do, or even when you were doing in-person training, do you
Absolutely.
have a lot of people barefoot?
Absolutely. Yeah, pretty much everybody's going to be barefoot. There's some stuff that I'll do on the wall. You know, there's still some situations where maybe someone has like a funky toenail or something. So I'll be like, ah, you can leave your shoe on for that. You know, you want them to be comfortable. But for the most part, I'm definitely encouraging barefoot work. And, you know, it's definitely a scale and a balance, though, because there's definitely people that are in chronic pain. And, you know, if you basically through the lens of something called PRI or Postural Restoration Institute, you know, you can find a specific shoe that actually fits them really well, not in terms of orthotics where we're like, you know, molding their foot into something else, but just positioning them in an advantageous way. And because of the biomechanics of the way that feeds up the whole system and how you're stacking everything, I mean, that can dramatically change everything. So it's not as simple as just be barefoot, but that can be a really good start for some people, especially if when you do go barefoot, you're not doing like hard plyometrics. Running barefoot was a really big thing that really messed up a lot of that movement and delayed it 10 years because people just went out and ran barefoot and they're like, why did my feet get hurt? It's like, dude, you can't move your big toe, but you're running barefoot on the track. Duh. You know what I mean? So it's not as simple as yes or no, but that's definitely a good start, especially around the house, just being barefoot, letting your walking in the grass, going on the beach, variability, and something as simple as hiking, dude. Like where you're at, man, there's so many great hikes in that
Oh,
state
yeah.
that you could go to. And like if you just think about variability in general, it's a really key concept to understand the idea that when you're hiking, your foot's going to land in so many different positions on the way up that mountain. And then it's even going to land in way more different ones on the way down. So, you know, that's what real life demands. So does your training reflect that? And for most people that are just doing squats and deadlifts and lifting in the same square, it's really clear and obvious that it's not. Your training is not preparing you for that. So you still get, you know, for example, I have a tennis athlete right now. And like I'm looking at what her coaches are giving her, and like she's in back pain, just fighting through all of it. And it's just like, why is this the case? You know what I mean? And that's not to hate on all strength and conditioning. Obviously, I'm part of that. But you know, the idea is, you know, adding that new science into it and including variability and preparing them specifically for the task that they need is something that should be addressed. And that all starts with an assessment, which again is another big kind of thing that's missing. I mean, you have a lot of trainers that the first day it's just like, I want to get them a good workout. It's like, yeah, that's cool, but if I actually tell you what you need through a science-based objective assessment, then we're really cooking, instead of like, oh, you know, I think they need squats, let's do squats, you know. You know what I'm saying? So
No, completely. I think, and what I've done with, you know, I've still worked with a few athletes out here. You know, people in basketball, they want to get, you know, and add some strength or conditioning training to the basketball they're doing. But, you know, I start them off with like a mobility test, something that, you know, when I started really improving my body, with all the injuries I've had over the years, like, you know, hey, let's just do some Jefferson curls with body weight. Let's see, you know, let's test your hamstring strength with some hollow body holds. Let's get some goblet squats so we can see how far you can go down with your body weight. See, you know, what your body can handle. And dude, I've taken some professional athletes and they can't walk the next day. Just doing some, like, you know, hey, we're not putting that much stress. We're just seeing, you know, where your body can go and move, and or even like some shoulder rotations with like a PCP pipe. And
Yeah.
it's like, oh my God,
You mean
this guy
PVC,
can do
right?
PVC.
Not, okay, I was gonna say, because yeah, you get those athletes on the PCP. I don't know, man. That could go south quick. But I get what you mean. Yeah, you're right.
My brain's working that well today.
It's all good.
But yeah, it's crazy to see, you know, and like you said, it's I think that's the beauty of the mobility, and that's the definition, or at least the understanding or terminology, if we can gear people in that direction to say, hey, we're trying to make sure you have control in those ranges of motion, and that you have little bits of strength and pieces. I think what's another great one for athletes is like just a skater jump, you know, being able
Yeah.
to do a skater jump and then turn on that foot and then start sprinting in that direction. Simple like footwork that you do on a basketball court. Because what's nuts is like I have not sprained an ankle since like college, and since I've been doing all this stuff. And it's like I'll go playing low top chucks and
Yeah, I
not have a
remember
problem.
you played like that last time we hooped together. I was like, what is he doing? That's crazy. And you're killing it, though,
Yeah,
so that's good.
Chelsea Pier, right? I
Yeah,
think it was there with Colby, and it's like,
exactly. C Dub.
yeah, C Dubs. I gotta check in on that guy. I haven't talked to him forever since he moved back to
Should.
Florida. It's needed. But just like things like that, it's like, it blows people's minds, but also it's just like, again, that's where we're coming back into these guys getting these ACL tears, just, you know, falling off, you know, come and get a rebound, landing on their feet, and that ankle doesn't turn the foot all the way back down and just clip, and it's like, ah.
Yep.
Ah, nah, it's, can't have that happen. How much, I know you work with a bunch of professional athletes, or have worked with a bunch of professional athletes. Mm-hmm. How ingrained is this stuff in on the professional level? Like, are a lot of guys doing this? Is still like very niche for a lot
depends,
of people?
Man. It really depends on the individual. You know, just like the strength and conditioning kind of college analogy. You know, there's some people that have seen the science, that have been there, and they've changed. You know, I think one of the things that we're seeing across America right now here is like, people sometimes are just so averse. Like, I could present you with all this new information and it could be backed by science, and you could still be like, nah, like I'm just not gonna really.
You're triggering me right now with all that.
That's okay. Or they won't
people
even,
not understanding science.
Or they won't even want to, like, at least listen. Like, if you don't want to change your opinion or you feel differently, like, that's cool too, because that's what we're all built on, is like having your own opinion, coming to your own conclusions. But to actually not, like, actually get into the science and be open-minded and non-biased is really important. I mean, but in terms of the professional athletes, man, it's really across the scale. You know, there's some people that are preparing really well and some people that aren't. And there's a lot of, and when it gets to the professional level, you always have to consider genetics, man, because, like, for example, like, perfect, like LeBron James, his feet are terrible. They're terrible. They're like gross looking. They don't move well. They're terrible, but they are perfect for being stuck in the right position for him to turn his foot out, pronate, basically jump right off of his big toe and just dominate the NBA for years. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So like, and his squat is terrible. It's heinous. It looks so bad, but he's an absolute legend. So there's genetics. It's just such a complex thing. And I think that that's really important to, even when you know the science, to appreciate how complex, how adaptable, and how different each individual is. You can really understand that we can work with what we have and we can keep it as objective as possible. But at the end of the day, like, people that are always trying to draw cause and effect, those are the people that I would be the most scared of. For example, I changed your squat, so now you can jump higher, or your ankle can move in this way now, so now I know the rest of your body's gonna be fine, your back pain's fine. It's okay to say, your ankle's not great, I improved it, and I hope it comes to better outcomes with everything else. Like, you, with science, because we're talking about something that's supposed to be objective, it's really easy to just take a step back and just, like, instead of jumping all the way in the pool, just be like, yeah, you know, like, this should make you swim better, but we'll see, you know? And that's the safe and honest and genuine way to go about it, which, you know?
Yeah, I think that's the problem with science and medicine, is that we treat it with this business aspect, but it's, you know, it's pretty objective. Where it's just like, hey,
yeah,
I'm gonna do some line jumps, and then there's some influencer. I think he ever played basketball, but he's, for example, got a really sick and ridiculous athletic and jumping ability. But it's like, yeah, you know, he can sell his program for $10 a session, you know, just teaching you, like, you know, how he's doing, you know, some scissor line jumps, or, you know, his own version of squatting, and it's like, okay, that might work for a few people, but that's not necessarily the reason why.
Yeah,
especially
exactly.
When mixing genetics. I mean, myself, you know, a 5'11 short white Jewish kid who can run and jump the way I can. I'm just lucky.
You're athletic as hell. That's for sure. And it's a mix of both. You know, it's not like you were just given this God-given talent. You didn't do anything. You worked hard, man. You did a lot. You know, so it's a mixture of both. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah. But definitely there's milkman genes. I think my mom and dad are like 5'6", 5'7". Like, you know, never really played sports or athletics. And I got this, you know, so I'm very, very grateful for that, to be one of those genetic types. Who's able to get that? FRC, what is FRC? How does that fall into, mobility
FRC,
and flexibility and training?
FRC is what I would consider the premier system for mobility training. It's created by Dr. Andrea Spina, and it's really represented as functional range conditioning. And then kin stretch, which is really confusing for people, is really just when you do a group class of functional range conditioning, it's called kin stretch. So
okay.
That's really all that is. Okay. Which is super confusing for everybody. And I totally understand that. So let's get that out of the way. But basically it's an interpretation of all of the literature that has to do with mobility, flexibility, strength training, aerobic capacity, really all of the really good research that's out there. They read it, they broke it down, and then FC is their interpretation of how you should train the human body based off of that. One of the things that really separates them is how strongly based they are in science. And, you know, like, it's so important because when you come to them, it's like, all right, let's have a discussion, but you have to have a discussion based off of, you know, what's real. The N equals one kind of thing, which is basically like, well, this worked for me, so I'm going to do it for 40 other people. And it's like, you know, that's cool. It's a good start, but there should be other principles that guide you towards that. And they just do such a good job of that. And they've been a huge part of my career in terms of learning how to train the human body. And I don't think there's anybody else that does mobility training like them and backs it up with both results and science. So FRC is a game changer.
What kind of new studies or findings do they have as of recent, or even, you know, some of their early work? You said Andres, what's his name?
Andrea Spina. So, I mean, honestly, it's a lot, you know, like there's a really, really deep list. One of the main things that you'll see is basically people think of stretching. There's a real big myth back in the day that if I'm an athlete and I stretch my hamstrings or my quads, I won't be as stiff anymore and then I won't be as explosive. So, you know, going into the research about that, you can build strength and control within those ranges of motion. And just because I can touch my toes doesn't mean that I won't be powerful halfway there, meaning like as my hamstrings only in its mid range, I can be really strong there. And even more importantly, what we're doing is we're actually gaining strength through the full range of motion, which is what you're talking about when we talk about that ACL. So if I train my knee to rotate, which is like a huge, oh my God, don't ever do that. Then when my when my knee lands in rotation, I have the capacity there to fight back. So that's going to be something that's a game changer because not only does it prove that we're working on strength when we need it, but we're really preparing for that doomsday. And that's the preparation is a really good idea of what FRC does is it prepares you for the task you want to complete. So it doesn't matter if you want to do BJJ, it doesn't matter if you want to be a runner or basketball, it's going to prepare you for those tasks based on the individual units that work in it. But the science is thick, man. I couldn't attribute one study to this because it's such a big collaboration. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And I always try and make kind of like little anecdotal or like little metaphors as well for people to understand and relay this. But you need to be able to put your body through certain levels of stress in order to be prepared for those doomsday scenarios in a situation on a court. Like, you know, for example, the shoulder, like, you know, you go up to get a rebound, one hand, some guy pushes your arm all the way back, guys pop their labrum, that's 6 to 12 months. But okay, what are we doing in the gym before all that? How are we making sure that this arm, when you take it back to an exterior rotation, is going to be strong enough to handle that hit whenever it happens? Because, you know, as you know, on a basketball court, you know, basketball is our middle ground that we can relate to in sports to, or some of these scenarios, you don't know what's going to happen. You fall up in the air, some guy cuts under your legs. Yeah. I think if people can, like, when they do these exercises, these stretches, it's like, hey, what kind of scenarios and understanding your body or weird positions you've been in on a court or a field that says, okay, I want to make sure I'm strong in this place. But, you know, I would say going through the FRC, you're going to find more exercises as well as workouts that are going to detail you for the sport you need to be able to prepare for, or that muscle group or those joints that you need to be strong in.
Definitely. Yeah. And a big thing to understand is really, like, first of all, when you're stretching, you're really just loading tissue. So, like, the idea that you're the difference between stretching and doing a deadlift, like, say I do an RDL, right, where I'm just going to bend over, I'm going to keep my knees a little bit soft, and I'm going to stretch my hamstrings. The toe touch and the RDL are only different in load. They're the same movement. So if I go into any position and I'm putting something on stretch, then we can talk about what we do in FRC where it's internal and external loading, right? So, like, if I'm internally using my stuff to load the tissue with intent, with a contraction, then I'm getting stronger with my stuff without the barbell. So when I go to step up to the barbell, I've already been strong with myself. I can already control myself. I can already load my hamstrings because I've already loaded them. I know that I can get into those positions, and then I'll be even more successful when I go back to the other stuff. Another really common theme that gets tossed around with FRC is people start to think like, one, you're going to be a contortionist. Absolutely not. Like, we're starting with the most fundamentals. If you actually saw where you'd start with FRC, it would be like lifting your arm up and coming around like this. So it's like not, you're not going to just all of a sudden go into a back bend. So a lot of people think that. The second thing that you're going to do is everything is going to be systematically progressed. So there's progressive overload is another really good principle. So where you start and where you finish are going to be totally different. It's going to take time to get there. But those are things that are really, really common. And the other thing that people think about FRC is, you know, hey, I'm doing FRC to do FRC. No, you're doing FRC so you can go back and do whatever you want and be really good at it. Like, we're not training you to be good at cars, which is an exercise in FRC. We're training you to be a good human so that you can do whatever you want and not get hurt doing it, which is a really important distinction. So a lot of people think like, oh, I can't do yoga anymore. No, you can do yoga, but when we get you to do FRC first and improve your internal loading, your internal capacity, and then you go back to yoga, you're going to be blown away by how good you are at yoga.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that we've gotten away from in, you know, when I just say health and wellness, is just having that buffet or that variety for your body. You know, whether you're either a professional athlete or you're training for something or you're just an athlete itself, your body needs to be able to, you know, go one day and do a CrossFit day. Hey, get some FRC in today. It's not about putting a ridiculous heavy load of strength training in, or heavy load of CrossFit, or heavy load of marathon running every single day. It's like putting your body through a variety of things. I mean, we even, you know, look back at kids and we say, you know, that kid's a great athlete because he's got, you know, so much of variety because he played this sport and this sport and this sport that he's been able to adapt, you know, a bunch of just applications and bring them back into one another thing. And I love my gym out here, Pharos. I was going to have you come teach a workshop out there when you were here. We couldn't make it happen, but, you know, they offer that variety. They have a massive 22,000 square foot space. So the space is ginormous, but, you know, they got a boxing ring upstairs taught by, you know, a few boxing professionals. They have, you know, a whole CrossFit area downstairs, different classes for different things. And it's like, it's just such a good splash of everything to be able to pick that stuff or to work with the trainers there to have that stuff. I'm making a little shout out and promo for them because I love those guys. But I think it's just a massive thing missing. We all get stuck, like you said, not being able to have that openness to adapt or to change or just say, hey, something someone's telling me isn't to tell me it's wrong. They're trying to offer a different mindset or a different idea that could potentially benefit me. But we're very stubborn here in the United States. We're exceptionalist.
Yeah, it's true.
This is the bar. This is where we set it. And that's it. I know you want to talk about this. And then when you mentioned it, I really want to talk about this because I don't think I fully understand this bone and these sets of bones around it, the pelvis. And, you know, until I started looking into FRC, researching again for this show, you know, realized how much just in the hips itself as well, like how big of an area that gets thrown off. You're talking about standing, you know, we kind of are asymmetrical, but we lean towards our right side. We're a little more right dominant. And I know that affects people as well in their hips, in the pelvis itself. So why don't you even start with the pelvis? Cause I don't even think people know much about one.
So just to expand a little bit, so like from the PRI lens, which is Postural Restoration Institute, and that's just another system of training and physical therapy in a way. But essentially, you know, they've done a really good job of, you know, researching and defining and then applying the idea that like our organs are not symmetrical, right? So like your right lung is actually bigger than your left lung. So if you think about that, you're going to end up breathing more into your right side, and then you're going to end up more on that right side. You can even get so much as to relying only on expanding that right side, and then your left lung over there is just weak, small, and what ends up happening is your left side, your rib cage actually opens up. So when it opens up, we can't contain pressure on the left side, which is going to affect your shoulders, going to affect your hips, it's going to affect everything. So that's really important to understand that we're not symmetrical. Another way that we're not symmetrical is actually in the representation of our brain. So the right side of our brain is represented more than the left side. So just another really clear example that we're going to be biased that side. So that's something that you really need to kind of understand eventually when you're going through training, because it does play a huge role. Now, in terms of the ribs and the pelvis, the most important thing that we're talking about is the ability to maintain IAP, which is really a fancy way of saying intradominal pressure or just stability in your midline. Now, what happens is your rib cage up top, there's a muscle called the diaphragm. Okay, it's like a big balloon in your stomach. Again, mm-hmm. asymmetrical, so it's not going to be the same on the left and the right. And then we have our pelvic floor, which is in our pelvis, kind of the bottom. And you see a lot of people having issues with breathing, stress, pooping, urinating, all kinds of issues, lower back pain, sacrum pain. So all kinds of stuff like that happening, and it's dysfunctional. So when we talk about this, we want the top and the bottom to actually compress together and be able to expand. So it's almost your midline is able to come together and go away. Now that creates this pressure and this stability in the midline that actually protects our lower back. So if we think about what's the most common thing to get hurt, lower back is going to be huge on there. Everybody's going to have pain at some point. Now, the other thing that happens is people don't know how to breathe properly, which is going to directly affect and just really just torment the ribs and the pelvis. Because if I'm walking around with my chest up because someone told me I have military posture, and I can't create stability in my midline because my ribs are all flared up and my lower back is arched, which is tipping my pelvis forward, there's going to be issues with everything. And you can have tons of people who look at your shoulder and say, oh, your shoulder's the issue. Work on your shoulder for months and never correct the midline, and then end up with no results in this kind of pain loop going back and forth and never really adding any capacity. So the idea that we need to have our rib cage be able to stay over our pelvis and then dynamically stay over our pelvis as we move different ways so that we can maintain that pressure in there.
So is that kind of that spine tucked? Like form, like with that diaphragm?
No, so well, that's the other thing is, like I said, dynamically. So like if I was to posterior tilt, which is basically what you're saying, like tuck my butt under me, then my rib cage would have to react to that as well. Or even more importantly, I would be able to have my rib cage in a multitude of different options with my pelvis in a multitude of different options and still maintain stability. And that's really like the end of the spectrum when you're really killing it, is when you have different options. Those things can separate and come together well, but you never lose the strength and stability that is created there in that midline for protection.
And all right, so both of these, if we're not in that proper position, is going to be constricting breathing. Like, and I know breathing's a massive one. I would say that people, it's funny when you watch someone smoke a joint or something for the first time and they're just like all of a sudden reflective on how little they're breathing, how focused they are on their breath. Like, oh my God, I'm losing my breath. I'm joking. Yeah. It's like, you just don't know how to breathe. It's okay. This is how poorly you breathe all the time.
So especially in this time, I mean, there's never been a better time, but obviously it has its own special implications right now. We're designed to breathe through our nose. So like something I tell all my clients is, unless you're running from a tiger, like you should be breathing into your nose. So like if you breathe into your mouth, you're in a panic mode. It's a flight or fight. If any, you've ever seen someone have a panic attack, they're sitting there like that. They're shrugging, right? So like if I'm doing a workout, and I'm doing something like a basic workout. For example, if you're doing something FRC, say I'm doing a shoulder car. So I'm just moving my shoulder through its full range of motion. Should I be in a panic mode? Absolutely not. If I'm in work, sitting down at my desk, should I be breathing through my mouth in a panic mode? Absolutely not. That is stress on your system. And then your boss comes, drops the TPA reports that you haven't finished. There's another level of stress. Then you go to basketball tomorrow, land on your knee. Guess what? That's all part of the puzzle. Just like what I'm saying. Just because I fixed your ankle doesn't mean I fixed everything else that goes into this huge puzzle of why did you actually get hurt or why are you not achieving the results you want. So breathing in through your nose is the number one thing. The other thing that we want to be able to do is actually bring our ribs down in. So like most people are caught in extension, so their ribs are flared up. If you can see the front of your ribs flared up and out, like you can actually see the bones, you're probably pretty flared up, man. And that there's going to be a lot of people that are like that. So being able to check it out right now. There you go. So being able to exhale and actually bring them internal rotation, which is them coming together. So if you put your hands on your ribs and you exhaled, your ribs would come towards each other, your fingers would come towards each other. That would be your rib cage coming down. Now, when we breathe with our rib cage coming down in the front, the air takes the path of least resistance. So if you're able to have abs in the front that keep your ribs down, your air will go into your back. Here's something that's going to blow someone's mind that's never even thought about their breathing. Where are your lungs? not in your belly. Okay, so like people think, oh, I've been working on my breathing, been doing belly breathing. Great, where are your lungs? Not in your belly. So what are we doing here? You know what I'm saying? Now, what I'm not saying is you can't breathe into your belly. What I am saying is if you lost the ability to breathe into your rib cage, specifically the backside of your rib cage, and even east and west, then we are in trouble. That should be one of the first things that's on your mind to really correct and really improve. And it will have the biggest effect on everything, especially your hips and your shoulders. Because when that relationship's messed up in the midline and it's not good, there's no options there, you're going to end up suffering at the neighboring joints. And that's a huge, huge deal. Now, what happens with FRC, if you're a coach listening here, oftentimes, like I said, you'll focus so much on those small details of how much my shoulder moves, how much my knee moves, but you'll never address their breathing. And that's kind of a huge mistake too. So that's why I kind of integrate a lot of different systems to kind of get to the outcome that I want. So if you were starting your breathing today, simply lay flat on your back, put your hands on your ribs, just get a little bit of feel in through your nose, and then exhale as long as you possibly can. What you're going to find out is you're going to see how much your ribs actually move. You want to get empty. So think about, people go every single day and they try to PR their front squat. They try to PR their snatch. When was the last time you tried to PR your breath? So how much can you inhale? Guarantee most people that are doing this, if they're listening, they're going to take a breath. They're going to get 2 seconds in. They're going to go, ooh, and it's just going to stop. And they can't get breath. They can't get air anywhere. Okay. Now, if we want to maintain articulation, which is like saying, and we want to maintain a joint, we want to maintain an area of our body, we want to get air there. We want to be able to get expansion there. That's one of the main things that you need. So what we can do is exhale fully, bring your ribs all the way down in there, and then hold your breath. Again, same thing. Most people listening are going to get to 2 seconds, full panic mode, and then they might even go and breathe in through their mouth, because they're not even used to holding their breath with their ribs down, because their ribs have never even been down until they started thinking about it today. So that's one of the easiest ways to make a big impact. We talk about shoulder rotation. We talk about all these different measurements that you can get in the shoulder and the hips. But when I can change your breathing for 10 minutes and your shoulder and your hip get better, now I'm really cooking. Now we're way ahead of the game. And then I can go work on your shoulder and hip and make them even better, because they're starting in a better position than they would be before if you didn't address your breathing. Does that all make sense?
I think so. And if I could make it a little bit more lay, I would say, please. You know, normally even like when I think, it's like my core. You know, I don't just think about my abs. I'm thinking hip flexors, hamstrings, you know, your abdominals here, lower back, and like Achilles. Like that would be considered like, you know, my base right there. But you're going even deeper and saying that I can't even work on those things, even like when we talked about the shoulder rotation and getting our cars going there. But we're talking about like not just to have your body in the proper position to be able to take in even more to improve, not just with stress levels, but understanding that there's even a deeper core area that we have to work on, and that is the correlation between the rib cage, diaphragm, and pelvis.
Absolutely. So that's good. So
I'm listening.
You can start anywhere, first of all, but if we're talking about the greatest impact, if I get you to breathe correctly, not only are you going to be stronger, your midline, your shoulders and your hips are going to improve, but your stress is going to decrease. If your stress decreases outside of training, that means I can stress you more when training, which is the reverse of what people do, because they go, oh, I'm going to work out even harder today. I'm going to do 2 boot camps. I'm going to do 2 CrossFit classes. And by the way, I'm going to have nothing to de-stress. You know, I'm going to go for a bike ride, which is great. Walking, great. But again, you go for a walk, mouth breathing the whole time, you know, like you're going to have limited gains. You're going to hit a roadblock at some point. So addressing that breathing is everything up front. And it's not as simple as there's this one position that you need. It's as simple as the connection between the ribs and the pelvis to dynamically move in multiple positions is what we want. But that starts by getting the expansion and redirecting the airflow to where it wasn't getting. And because of the asymmetries of the body, that's probably, this is the most common finding, is the front or the back of your left rib cage. So think your upper back on the left side and the front of your right. And if you've ever taken a posture picture and noticed that your right shoulder is lower and your left shoulder's higher, then hey, you fit into this most common pattern that you're going to see. So the right side is compressed down. Oftentimes right shoulder is very limited because the whole entire compressed side is there, so the base for the shoulder to move. And then the left side's weak because it can't contain and create pressure on the left side, and we're not getting any air into the upper back on the left side because, again, the left lung is a little, it's weaker, it's smaller, it just naturally is, especially if you haven't been working on it.
Well, I think also it's like you said, like, and when you get a good inside look at your organs, like how compressed and tight, they're all packed in together perfectly, and they grow in size together over the years. And I just automatically assume, you know, hey, your heart's on your left side, your lung is close to your heart. So I imagine that that's just, you know, it's another thing over there that you're not going to have on the right side. Would that be something that's, you know, naturally going to get smaller as well?
Definitely. Yeah. There's asymmetries through the organs on both sides in many ways. And another thing to consider is, like, when we talk about overall health, again, like, I'm trying to make the biggest impact on as many systems as possible. So, you know, gut health is something that's really important right now. That's really blowing up. You know, microbiology is coming really along, talking about the microbiome and all these different things. But you have your organs and you can't get air anywhere. What do you think your organs are doing? They're just staying stuck together. There's no movement there. So if I can get breath and I can get expansion into these areas, then I have freedom for my guts to move around. Just like when you're foam rolling and you're trying to get things to slide better. The best way to slide better in your stomach is to actually get air in there and to fill up different areas that aren't getting air and restore what we've mainly been talking about, which is variability, right? So if one of my organs is stuck, everything's compressed on one side and I can fill it all the way up, all of a sudden my digestion's better, right? My pelvic floor issues are a little bit less. I'm not, you know, finding pee in my pants and all kinds of things that people have issues with. So it's really about starting off with the most fundamental thing that's going to give you the biggest impact across every system in the body. And everybody's an individual, so it's not like there's only one way. But for me, breathing is 9 times out of 10 going to be exact where we start.
I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. Now, how does the pelvis come into that? And what is the pelvis? I mean, I thought it was an organ at first. All this time, I figured, oh, it's probably got to be an organ, you know, but as you learn more and more, oh, it's this bone. There's actually like 4 or 5 pieces to that bone, and it gets tilted and it gets shifted over time, you know, especially not just if you're playing sports, but you're sitting in a chair all day, you know, men's and women's biology, like there's different sizes. I think the males is bigger from if I read correctly.
Yeah, there's all kinds of differences because think childbirth, right? Mm-hmm. That bone's got to be different when we got childbirth. And also just thinking about, you know, the anatomy of the differences between a female and a male is definitely going to be different. So the pelvis is really what the simplest way to think about it is a bowl of water, right? So it's a bowl of water and at the bottom of your spine. So if the bowl of water spills forward, I'm going to be tilting the water forward. I'm going to be tilting forward. If the bowl of water spills backwards, I'm going to be tilting backwards, which would in most people, because they don't have the separation of the pelvis from the spine, they're actually going to just round their lower back. So if you see someone really slouched over in a chair, that would be the bowl of water spilling backwards. Now, another really common example that people come to me all the time with is I went to a physical therapist, and they said one of my legs is longer than the other. Cool, man. So let's just go into this. So if first of all, how you measuring that, right? And then there is ways to measure it, but like, again, it's just so complex. So if someone's hip is hiked up on one side, am I going to think that one leg's longer than the other? Absolutely, right? So instead of thinking, hey, guess what? We're going to put a little pad in your shoe. You're going to get a little taller on that left side, and we're going to send you home. Maybe it makes more sense to restore the motion at the pelvis. Now, not to get too in-depth, but the pelvis is also, like you said, it's a combination of multiple bones. So one thing that can happen, just like your diaphragm, just like your wrist, is one side can move in one direction and the other side can move in a different direction. So your pelvis can do this and have you moving. In fact, what I'm doing right now is walking. So when I do that, that's actually what's going to happen when you're walking. So to not have that motion, it's so fundamental. And it's not as simple as, oh, it needs to stay tucked under you all the time, but you better be able to tuck it under you and you better be able to move it in the opposite direction, because the more options you have, especially when they're represented in the activities that you want to perform, you're going to be prepared for them again, just like we've been talking about the whole time. Does that make sense?
Yeah. What activities are those that we want to be prepared for that, you know, the pelvis is, you know, are there certain sports or different positions that, you know, is going to be experiencing the most effect or going to be, has the possibility of being shifted or twisted in the wrong directions.
Yeah. So think about, you know, again, walking is one of them. So say on one side of my pelvis, it's tilted forward and I'm trying to walk, my hip's going to get stuck in the front. And then you're going to say, oh, why hip pain? Well, yeah, your hip pain is, it's probably because your pelvis is stuck and you're not able to express that full range of motion. Another example, like when we talk about tucking under, and you can tuck your pelvis under you and round your lower back. Those are two separate things again. So if I'm a BJJ athlete or someone who does any sort of combat based and I need to be on my back and I can't round my lower back or I can't tuck my pelvis under me, I'm screwed because it's already all toned up. My lower back's firing to try to keep me from getting into that position. And then someone jumps on me, I get hit with a knee. Someone tries to twist my leg off. So there's another really specific example where you're gonna need that. But again, it's really all about, yes, there are specific examples in specific sports, but when we're talking about breathing, when we're talking about the pelvis, when we're talking about the, these are fundamental movements that we're going to be representing in walking. So like, you don't even need a sport to need your pelvis to function properly. And you do want it to function in correlation or in, you know, a teamwork vibe with your rib cage above it.
Yeah, I think we got yelled at, I don't know if it was by Colby or somebody else last time, for, you know, when you're walking down the street or just walking at the park and you're looking at people, how they walk, and you can just look at some points like, oh man, that's, they got really tight hips, or oh man, that person's hamstrings or lower back just looks, you know, it's almost like the empathy, you feel their pain.
Yeah, think about, so we described the idea of being biased to your right side. So this is usually something that helps with a lot of people to understand this. If you think about the Statue of David, right? You know what I'm talking about, where he's slouched to the side and every single joint in his body reacts to that. So as he posts up on his right side, his rib cage shifts, his neck shifts, and everything stays stacked over his right side. Now you go to the mall, just like you're talking about. Watch, dude, it's crazy. You can look at the bottom of your shoes. Why is the right heel just murdered and the rest of your foot is just chilling, has no wear on it? Well, it probably makes a lot of sense that you've just been riding that right heel and you never even gotten to the left side fully. Or again, if you see a standing posture, now again, it's just a static position, it's not the end all be all, but if I have a static picture of you from the front and the back and I draw a line down the middle and most of your body's on the right side, dude, pretty good indication that we might be on that right side only, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, I definitely know and catch myself standing on one side or the other and like just planted on one heel. So I know I do that myself, but I've never noticed that with the shoes. I'm definitely going to check that one out.
Yeah, you should,
and
just, man.
And see which one is, or if like, for example, that right side, because I know I'll stand like this, like just dug in that right side and like you're all the way into that hip joint and you just
even think about skateboarding, right? Like
how skateboard
often
now
that's why I'm bringing it up. I've seen it. But like think about skateboarding, like how often are you just popping onto the other side and be like, you know what, I'll use my left foot now, you know what I mean, or I'll use my right foot. Like you'd have to consciously think about that, but most people aren't gonna do that. And now you think about what I talked about with FRC and like the actual science. When you put force into something or you repeat an action, an adaption is going to occur. So if I'm a baseball player, if I'm a skateboarder and I do something on the same side over and over and over again, there's going to be, whether it's a consequence or a positive adaption, something's going to change. And that's why we're talking about the most fundamental movements, which everybody stands. Again, I start with breathing. I'm going to look at the way you stand. I'm going to look at the way that you sit. It's not going to be what guides my whole entire intervention or program, but it's something that's really important and it makes a lot of sense to kind of include.
What was I going to say with that?
And one more thing. Symmetry is not the goal because it's actually not possible because we've already established that we're asymmetrical. So being symmetrical is not the goal. I'm not going to take my baseball player and be like, you know what? It's time to practice throwing left-handed for a month. But what I am going to do is look for function. So I don't care if you can throw left-handed, but you better be able to use your left hip. I don't care if you can throw your curveball with your left hand, but if your left shoulder doesn't work at all, then we probably need to increase the function there. So that's a really important thing to chase to, because what I'm not looking for is this perfect plumb line posture picture. Sure, maybe that happens as a byproduct or it looks like it, but that's not the goal. Function is the ultimate goal.
So would you say with that asymmetry or an asymmetrical form that we're probably, or trainers are looking to like just understand as a frame that we're not going to have everything balanced, or we're not going to have your client looking at a balanced way, it's kind of looking, I mean, in terms of not having an asymmetrical way, that we're kind of looking for a balance, that this side's going to be a little tilted more here. How can we make sure that either the other side has something, or is there a balance that we're trying to get there?
Yeah, it goes right back to the idea of almost like the goal isn't the static posture. It's not to be symmetrical. It's not to be balanced. The goal is that you can do what you want to do. So, for example, people oftentimes will demonize pronation, which means when your foot rolls in and you push off your big toe, as if everybody needs to screw their feet into the ground the whole entire time. If you've ever watched anybody walk, they have to roll from the heel to the outside of the foot to the ball, and then they push off and then go to the next step. So the goal isn't to get you really good at pronation. The goal is to get you really good at pronation and supination. So you have the spectrum so you can do both. So whatever you do, if I need to supinate my ankle, I supinate it. If I need to go ahead and pronate, I pronate it. It's about giving you options that you need. And when you look at the asymmetry and you say, listen, your left hip can't do this, your left shoulder can't do this, then we say, this needs an intervention because it needs to be improved in order for you to be successful with what you want to do and be healthy. Does that make sense?
No, completely. Completely. Like I said, it goes back into the greater ideas, you know, with overall our health and medicine and even our education systems. Yes, these systems they've been great to get us to these points, which is like to get tens of millions and hundreds of millions of people to start working and getting healthier as a whole and a collective, but it can't improve that way. We need to do a little bit more specialized things for, you know, all the way down to the individual level. When that comes to education, when it comes to medicine, when it comes to health and wellness, it can't just be, hey, eat 6 to 11 carbs a day when it comes down to your health. It can't just be, hey, make sure you get 100 deadlifts in, 100 bench presses, and who cares how much you do? You know, again, for Jocko Willink, the crazy Navy SEAL, that works great. He can do that. He's trained his body and his stress levels to do that on an everyday basis at 4 in the morning every day. But it's not going to be work for everybody. And people can't look at systems as, again, their saviors, their end-all be-all to solve their entire problems. It's a journey. It's a process. And your own journey and process is going to be unique to yourself. Even as a coach, I'm sure, which you've hearkened on along the show right here, and what I've seen you do, and what you try to relate to people, even like as we're talking now, like, listen, I got to see how you're breathing. I got to see, you know, how you can move. Like, and what works for him or what works for her is not going to connect specifically with you as well.
One of the things that you can do if you're listening at home and, you know, forget me, just whoever you wanted to work with, especially in this term, like you're going to take classes with someone, you're going to do this with someone. If you go online and you ask someone, hey, I'm having knee pain, do you have any exercises for knee pain? And they don't start with, I would need to assess you to be able to give you a real answer, then I'm sorry, I'm not fucking with them. Sorry, that's not it. Now, what you can say, I would have to assess you to be able to help you fully, but here's an exercise that just works on making your knee work like a knee, essentially a knee car. You can start this and maybe do it pain-free. Then that's a good compromise, but at least it has to start with, you're an individual, we need an assessment, that's objective. And if more people said that, instead of putting up rehab programs on Instagram, do these 6 exercises because you have some general ass thing that got diagnosed 4 years ago, then maybe people would be less confused. Unfortunately, that's not going to change anytime soon, but the more people can be educated on, you know, like I think one of the big things that you really kind of hit on recently with that last statement was the idea of taking responsibility. And I know it's really tough because I can relate to this even on something as parallel as nutrition. I'm not passionate about nutrition. I don't want to learn a ton about nutrition. I don't care about the biology of nutrition. It's just not my passion. And I'd rather refer out for that. But when it comes to your own health, you do have to take responsibility and you do have to dive in. You do have to become a student. And that's what we're talking about. It's not going to be the same level as a coach, but you need to achieve that baseline and start asking the right questions. And unfortunately, with the way that group fitness is built and the way that the industry is built right now, it's let me show up, get killed, and I think I'll get better. And unfortunately, that's just not the truth. That leaves a lot of people hurt. Just like the same thing, Jocko Willow, right? Or I forget how to pronounce his name, but like, you know, what you're doing, following him and doing it could be the worst thing possible for you. You have lower back pain. Deadlifts are good for your back. You deadlift with crappy form. Your hip can't deadlift. Next thing you know, you're hurt. What really sucks is like getting to the fear aspect of it, because the last thing I want to do is motivate you with fear, but you end up saying sentences like that anyway. Nobody should be motivated by fear. They should be motivated by the promise of health through education.
I mean, yeah, there's so much there.
Sorry, to pick up on.
No. It's great. No, it's great. You're passionate, you're able to get those points across. You know, people forget, like I said, it's not, hey, I did this for 6 months and that's it. But also, hey, you get a lot of shit going on. Some terrible thing might be happening to you in life. You know, you made something, an example before. You might get these reports in. You fucked up on these reports. Your boss is, you know, you're on the hot seat now. Your relationship's tanking over here. There are never not going to be more and more responsibilities that are going to hit you as you grow in age. There's only going to be more responsibilities and more things and more people that are going to rely on you in different parts and different aspects of your life. Can you do those things for yourself though first? And that's not the selfish thing, fuck everybody else, YOLO. It's like, hey, was I able to execute on these things today? Was I able to go and maybe not eat only one pizza this week? You're making like very, very, very rudimental goals towards a grander path. But, you know, as much as I don't like all the metaphysical stuff and the crystals and all that, I think there's certain levels of, understanding your vision, imagining what your life is going to be, where you want to push that towards. You know, it's not the secret, like just all imagine you get a Ferrari and you're going to get a Ferrari. Like, you have to understand where the path goes, how, what that path looks like, and then put the plan in place and then execute on that plan. And, you know, that's just, again, what a lot of people and what you specialize in with health and wellness that we've gotten away from, not just an industry, but, you know, as individuals ourselves. It's not just, hey, this guy does it online. What do I want to be? What is the weight I want to be? What is the move I want to be able to do on a sports field? And, you know, luckily, you know, what sports was so great for us as kids growing up, you know, is like, it was anticipation. And doing that with sports allowed us to go and say, okay, well, I want this to go here and I expect this move to go here. And if I can go on a pickup game and do it, and I can do it on my own freestyling, then I can do it there. But it's a lot. Like I said, I just went on a ramble there. Getting this stuff and maintaining it is not easy, people. It's not easy.
Yeah, it's hard work. When I do online training one-on-one, people ask me all the time, can I sign up for a month? No, you can't. You have to do 12 weeks. There's no month. There's no 1 week. If I'm going to spend the time to go through the full assessment, if I'm going to explain to you, if I'm going to impart all this education on you, I need at least 12 weeks of buy-in, because it takes 6 weeks to really see any big change anyway. So if you listen to me, you're going to see two cycles of huge, huge progress that's both visible and internal in what you're feeling. And then you'll say, wow, thanks for making me commit. Great. And it starts with small things, just like you're talking about, a little bit less pizza. One of the things that I really preach to all my people right now is aerobic capacity, right? Which everybody immediately thinks I need to go sprint. But what I'm actually talking about is just getting total movement. And we talked about it earlier with New York City. Dude, the amount of health that you gain from walking is incredible. So like, if you're dealing with stress, you have neck pain, you have this, you have that, your body's ability to deal with that stress is also correlated with the amount of total work you can get done in. And I'm talking about physical work too. So if you can go for longer walks and even walk a little bit faster and still breathe through your nose, pass the talk test, keep your heart rate in a zone too, you're able to deal with so much more stress, and you might not even need to stretch. Your body might get so good at filtrating, at having a strong heart, that some of the other stuff we don't even need. And I don't want to do anything that you don't need. I'm not going to have you stretch to stretch. Like I said, I'm going to have you do exactly what you need to get you where you want. And that could be as simple as working on, you know, how good your heart is just by getting walks in and moving more throughout the week, which doesn't get preached a lot. If you see, we have fad diets, we have supplements, we have HIIT classes, we have all of this stuff where you try to take 12 weeks of progress and cram it into 30 minutes and a pill and then say, go and enjoy life, you know? And unfortunately, people are misled often.
Yeah, they're misled just on the hard work part. It's, yeah. You know, they see it in a 10-second social media ad. I create them, so I know when I create them for clients. And it's just, oh my God, this is it. This is the plan. This is it. I just got to push this button. You know, spending the money using your credit card is almost like we become blind to the biological, you know, marketing has done such a good job with just like cueing in on our biological, like just sensations that we want, that we, oh, it's going to happen. We're going to get it. And then we get it. Like, it's just been that mask. And I hark on this all the time on the show, just like this faux capitalism. That's like, not saying capitalism bad, but we can do it better. You know, just being lied to or told that we need cheap plastic goods, or, you know, getting this thing and that thing to change is going to fix everything. It's like, no, there's a whole other side to it. There's two sides of that coin, and you have to be able to do that work on that stuff. So,
people don't realize, just because you buy the booty band doesn't give you a booty. You still got to do the work, you know?
And some of those gals got great jeans.
Yes, they sure do. And they might be doing all that booty work wrong too. And then you do it wrong and your lower back hurts. And it's like, well, maybe you should be following a little bit someone else. You know, the influencer thing is like great, and it's also bad. You know, it really crushed the fitness industry in so many ways. But, you know, there's a lot of great influencers out there too. So I'm not going to say it's all bad.
Yeah. Like I said, it's the word. And what it means now is, like, you know, these people actually have sway in like social and cultural views of our society. It's just, again, where are we gearing those messages towards? What do we want them to gear towards? And do these people have the balls or the gusto who are in these positions of, you know, power in the social cultural landscape to actually make some positive change and actually impact people? Or is it just, hey, again, like what I said, how much money can I make off of this in the meantime to do that? So it's a greater value issue. So you know, I appreciate the work you do. I love the work you do, and I know there's a really solid message behind everything you do. So that's why I bring you on the show, and that's why we tackle it on here, man. I had a few more questions before I let you go. Are you good on time?
Yeah, man, go ahead, whatever you need.
Yeah. I've seen people do like the kettlebell. We were talking before about breathing being able to like kind of lubricate and help those organs and everything move.
Gut massage.
Yeah. Is that a thing? Is that something I could be putting a kettlebell on here, and how much kettlebell should I be putting on there to move that around with?
Yeah. So the physical therapy clinic that I worked at, we actually used to do that a lot. And he was really diving more into the functional medicine side of things. So it was a unique situation and a great learning opportunity. I'm so thankful for it. And that's something that we did. So it's not necessarily wrong or bad. What you don't want to do is kind of put that on there and it caused pain. You know, what really happens with that most of the time is when someone puts that on them, it's really just taking away some of the sensitivity. So some of that tension that you might have from doing a ton of crunches, which is going to build up a muscle that doesn't necessarily, it's not necessarily meant to stabilize your midline. It's more about actually flying or crunching or rolling up, basically. You know, that's going to not turn off, but it's going to downregulate some of that tissue and allow you to kind of relax it. But the real key to that is that you're laying on your back, you're relaxing, you're breathing. Another really good example of exactly that. It's perfect. I think this will help people. When a basketball player gets done and they sit on their chair in a nice recliner and they put some big, the Normatec boots on that basically just inflate and pressure their legs, you're not changing anything with that. It's not changing anything. It's not releasing tissue. It's not doing any of that. What you are doing, though, is laying down, relaxing. You're probably going to breathe better. You're chilling. And there's a placebo effect, one on each leg. And it's like, man, this is great. You know, so that's something. What I'm saying is you can do the gut massage. If it works for you and you feel good doing it, that's great. Make sure when you're doing it, you're breathing through your nose. You're relaxing. Shouldn't be painful at all. It's not something that I do regularly with people, but we had success with it at the physical therapy clinic. And, you know, it's basically out of my realm in terms of something that you'd want to do. What it won't do is ever match the hands of a skilled therapist, you know, which is obvious, but, you know, just a side note. Before I started that, I would definitely see someone in person and deal with it in terms of like a, you know, a thorough assessment like we've been talking about.
All right. Sweet. Do you have a favorite exercise or a favorite stretch, you know, to it could be for a specific muscle group, it could be for a specific joint. Do you have one in particular that you enjoy that you throw at everybody no matter what? Even though I know we talked about, actually
Yeah,
getting an assessment
that's
before
a
looking at
great
someone's knee.
question. I get it. So yeah, cars would be we'll link the routine. I'll send that over to you. But that would be basically like we talked about. Like someone comes to me with their knee pain, and I say to them, I can't know exactly what's going on or give you anything detailed without assessing you. But what I can do is give you the series of exercises that maintains every joint in your body. And as long as you do it pain-free and you're getting better at it, you might even film yourself and see if there's any mistakes you're making and improve upon them. You're going to improve a lot of things. So there is some baseline stuff, but it all is predicated on them understanding that A, you're not going to be getting the most specific thing for you. So this isn't the fastest way to get to where you want. B, none of it should cause pain. It shouldn't be sketchy. And C, you need to be progressively getting better at it in terms of not moving through the other joints, because the idea is to isolate one joint and move only through that. Also, staying away from maybe your ribs flaring up, or maybe as you do them, something that I do with a lot of my clients is the idea is you're going to do the same exercise, but when you do it later, it's way easier. So we talked about that fight or flight response. So when I put you on your back and have you try to reach up and like round your upper back, it's going to feel like you're dying the first time you do it. But by the 10th time, if you can relax and breathe into that position, that's progress. And it doesn't involve another 45-pound plate or something else that somebody might say, oh, well, this is me getting better. It's just a totally different way of actually achieving a new outcome. And that's what that would be. So cars would be what I would give you for that in terms of like the general thing. And so, hey, my hip's not good. Great. Start doing hip cars. Just make sure they're pain-free. Take them easy. Go slow and build on them over time.
Yeah, I was watching a great Rogan podcast recently. He had either was a former UFC fighter that's now a trainer, name started with a Z, and it again goes back to this mentality we have, and it's not just with fitness. It's just I got to go out there and die today in order to get a good workout, and it's like no, you can add that part in. You can do that once or twice a week, but it's not a daily type thing. But also, there's like different levels of stress that I don't think people understand. Where it's just like, oh, wait, am I putting myself through stress right now? It's like, no, we haven't really moved that much. So people really got, they either can't find that balance, but I think it's a little bit more along the sides of we're pushing ourselves way too hard, especially if we're, I'm not a pro athlete or college athlete anymore. I don't need to be pushing myself these crazy. I enjoy doing it, but, I think everybody can find a great balance and they can look great and they can be healthy, but, we got to get away from that mindset of just going hard, 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 because this goes into my next point. What I want to get into with you is inflammation. I think people look at inflammation as a negative, but terminology wise, it's the body's natural reaction towards any injury or ailment. Just like you get a cut on your arm, it gets red around. It's inflamed. It's get it like a little marker for the body to say, hey, we got some open sore here. We got to get some, red blood cells and white blood cells there to combat it, make sure it's not getting infected. And so we say the same thing with like bruising or, any puffiness or swelling we get like, this in our ankle. But then also I see that correlated with, our muscle groups. We think about that core and, correct me if I'm wrong on any of these things, but, especially like somebody says, hey, they got a tight lower back. It's never like I advise people too, like, hey, never actually, maybe it's not the lower back necessarily that's tight. How are your hamstrings? Getting into that assessment mode when you talk to somebody, hey, how's your Achilles tendon? Are you able to, rock your, move your ankle and give it a good flexion and good flexibility down there at the bottom? Can you do all that? How are your hips? Because I always, like, I mentioned those as my core, that's my core muscle groups, because I see them so tightly correlated to each other. And that goes back to the body itself being one body. Everything works together and pulls on each other.
Oh, I'm sorry,
So
dude.
yeah,
I
I went
gave you a
on,
question.
but just like the general area of inflammation and what do you think about how do you define that and how do you look at and assess somebody, when they have an injury or
Yeah, so
they're calling for a problem?
you're spot on with inflammation being a natural process. So I think one of the biggest things that is, again, similar to the sentence of your lungs are not in your stomach or your belly. Ice has been one of the most commonly used things throughout history, and it's actually bad for you. So like there's very rare circumstances where ice is actually beneficial. So you
No.
can so you can look it up, the research, but essentially ice is actually delaying the process of your body to actually get everything moving. So if I sprain my ankle, instantly, yes, it makes some sense to maybe put some ice on it. There's different, bodies of work in terms of the research on that. But long term, like if you have back pain, you're just icing your lower back. Terrible idea. You could move your lower back, especially like in the spinal cord, which would be like segmentally doing like a cat cow if you're familiar with yoga, and you would get 20 more times that. Because the afferents, which is the feedback that we talked about when we talked about the foot, the signaling from the foot to the brain and back, when you put ice on it, you're really disrupting that signal. So we're really disrupting the body's way to communicate how to recover from something. Another good example of this is, how when we were younger, you would run and you'd do suicides, we'd do like, layup drills and all kinds of stuff. And then after, coach would say, yo, put your hands on the back of your head. Make
Oh
sure
my
you
God, when
don't.
I learned this one, my mind
Yes.
exploded.
But that's what I'm saying. People need to let their minds explode. And that's another example of like how, if this is something so rooted deep in your mind could change, like how do you not look at the rest of the world and be like, I need to be open to change when presenting new information. So like for anybody that doesn't know what we're talking about, when you put your hands on your knees really tired, it puts you in a better position to breathe and it puts you in a better position to recover. So unless I'm going to, the balls are the balls being hiked and I need to go right back to my mid linebacker position, I would benefit from putting my hands on my knees and breathing. I'm not soft, I'm not dying, I'm literally scientifically improving my body. So in terms of the inflammation, it's really where I'm at as a trainer, I'm not necessarily dealing with that on too deep of a level, but the few things that I am going to do are breathing, right? So I'm going to get that movement for my guts. I'm going to get that expansion through my ribs. I'm going to get all that stuff to help with the inflammatory process. And I'm going to put someone in the state of rest and digest or relaxation because my body's going to deal with inflammation way better when I'm not super hyped up breathing through my mouth on the couch. Now, the other thing that I'm going to do with that is, again, walking. I can't tell you how important it is. You walk, you're moving your body in low impact, non-stressful way. And what do you think is happening when your arms swing? You're moving inflammation around. The lymphatic system is what filtrates inflammation and actually works on, transporting waste within your body. And when we do move and do something like walking, we're actually helping facilitate that system. So those would be the two biggest things that I would do. And then honestly, dude, sleep, man. So many people have tried to recreate the wheel. They've tried everything, but they've never even worked on going to bed on time, man. And it's a joke, Pair all those things together. Go for a walk in the morning. Do your breathing before you go to bed and then sleep right. Most people don't need the cupping. They don't need the needling. They don't need all that stuff. Not that it doesn't work, not that it doesn't help, but you'd be surprised how many people go, man, I feel really good. It's like, yeah, no shit. really obvious. Like, and you didn't pay anything for that. Like, you didn't need the $49.99 booty band or the program. All you needed to do was go for a walk, learn how to breathe, and then go to bed on time. Put your goddamn phone away an hour before you go to bed and just look at the wonderful things that happen for you over the next few weeks. And it happens all the time, man.
Your alarm clock still works on airplane mode. You don't actually have to go to sleep in regular cellular mode. You can go to sleep. I've been doing that recently because my sleep's been so fucked during this entire pandemic, man. We live in this part of LA where the helicopter traffic is massive, and there's all those conspiracies that they're throwing fireworks and flying these helicopters low just to fuck with people. But man, they are just way too low, from like Coast Guard choppers to LAPD choppers to military grade choppers to those like triple propeller new choppers they got. Man, it's like I'm waking up every day. It's like, am I in Viet fucking Nam right now? Like, holy shit. Like, they're that low, like 300, 400 feet above the house. And you're just like, why am I waking up to the house shaking? It's
I mean,
unnecessary, but.
you could have the best hip, the best shoulder. You could breathe really well. You could do all the things we've been talking about. And then you could sleep 2 hours, feel like shit. Tell yourself, you know what? Well, Jocko said I need to go to the gym today. So I'm going and I'm gonna go real hard. Next thing you know, dude, pulled your hamstring, something went wrong. And then you come to me and go, why did I do this? And I go, well, let's look at all of these things. Maybe this one makes sense. How'd you sleep? How'd you do that? So like we can only control so much, and it's nearly impossible, especially as a trainer, to establish a cause and effect relationship. But what I do know is sleep has been proven time and time again scientifically to really just help everything. It's a no-brainer. Your brain literally like washes itself and recharges while you sleep. So it's going to affect everything in your life. And that's why when you train with me, I try to start with those big pillars, and sleep is definitely one of them. And if you're listening, like, free advice, as stupid and simple as it is, like you said, man, when I look at my phone before bed, I basically look at this. If I look at my screen 30 more minutes, I'm up. It almost works to the T. Okay. So if I put my phone away and I don't look at it, I'll even forget. All of a sudden I'm asleep just out of nowhere. But if you're checking Instagram, you're looking at this, you're posting memes, which we've all done and I've done, you're going to end up being awake longer, and that's an issue. So being strict with your sleep is one of the first places to start, especially if you're in pain.
Yeah, I think the blue light thing, people obviously don't realize that it gives off that same feeling of sunlight, and sunlight giving you energy. And when you absorb that through your eyes, you said, it actually does give you a jolt, like, oh, it's still sunlight outside. So your body just completely, it's trying to make melatonin, but it's also saying, hey, there's light outside. Hey, what's going on? So you just completely confuse your body tremendously. But I got to go back, man, because you triggered me with that one. I think I got like messages from everybody when that report came out. What was the original report that told us we had to keep our hands over our head? I think I might have ran like 30 extra miles as a kid because we may have slouched over and said, okay, everybody back on the line. Back on the line, because he put his hands not on his head. He put his hands down. Yeah. You're being weak. Get down. They know you're tired. It's like, oh my God, yeah. I'm traumatized.
Yeah, I honestly think it's a perfect question, because it really illustrates another one of the big points that we talk about. And I don't think there was a report. I don't think there was a scientific study. I don't think that there was any scientific validation to it. I think it was simply, I think military posture is good because my uncle is in the military and he told me to stand up straight when we did our photos at Christmas. And now I'm a coach and I'm going to tell everybody to do that. And I'm a man, so I can't have emotions. I can't be weak. So this person, I'm going to yell at them and make sure they put their hands on their head. And it just snowballed into this huge effect that just was a misunderstanding of the actual science and a misrepresentation, man. That's what I think.
I mean, I got my hands over my eyes. I can't believe it.
Dude, there's still probably coaches listening right now that are going to be like, you know what? I don't believe it. I don't believe it. Get your goddamn hands up. You know what I mean? Like, just like the remember Hard Knocks? They had that big fat, the Cleveland Browns coach. And he's like sitting there with the belly. He's like, did they stretch in Vietnam? Did they stretch on Normandy Beach? No, they just went. And like, you're looking at this dude, like, he's obviously the opposite of health. You know what I mean? Like, this is not the guy I want my health from. And it's just another example of exactly that.
Well, I mean, us as millennials, we're in such an interesting position, especially, you know, as the new torchbearers to, you know, the Gen Zs, or whatever that next generation is going to be, because, you know, we weren't born with the internet. We were like raised into it. And, you know, whether it was our parents or teachers or any role models that we had growing up, it's like once we, you know, now that we have cell phones, and, you know, I think it's interesting to be a parent in these times, like, it's opened up a complete veil, or like pulled a veil away from transparency. Like, you can't just say to your kids, hey, this is bad for you because I said so. Or you, this, like this and that. Like, you got to come with reasoning. You got to come with an answer. And, you know, I see that with everything going on with COVID, kind of, you know, this is a brand new disease. It's a brand new virus or variation of a coronavirus. Like, health professionals aren't going to get this right all the way. You working in the health and wellness space, this is what, like, the point we're talking about right now. It is an ever-changing landscape based on science. We got to be able to delve and mold and find out what's going to be the correct thing and the right thing. People, anybody telling you they got the cure, they know the answer, this is the way to do it, like, those are people you're going to want to question. Like, yeah, it's got to, you've got to be open, and you got to be able to pivot. And, you know, like I said, I think it is a great thing. As much as I'm traumatized still by that goddamn breathing thing, I think it's a great thing that we can say now, hey, coach, you know, here's a report from, you know, Johns Hopkins that says there is no correlation to this. So you telling me to do this actually is a really traumatic thing to be doing to us kids right here. And it's funny, a 10-year-old kid could do that now with a cell phone and could be more based in fact, or more based into a more relevant theory of how to probably live this experience.
I think education is really, man, at all-time low in the United States in terms of, funding and, man, just screwing the teachers over, sending kids back. It's an absolute nightmare. But one of the biggest things that needs to be taught in school is learning how to get through information and critically think. And I think the scientific method is the best representation of that. You know what I mean? And that's what you're seeing is the scientists that might be wrong or right are saying, hey, guess what? I was wrong, but the only reason I'm wrong is because there's new objective scientific information that's being presented. And that ability to change and to evolve, whether you're a trainer or an athlete or someone being trained, is just so important. And bias and dogma are just, they kill me. I posted a knee, an elbow plank on your knees yesterday on Instagram, and I had an entire community of people come out and yell at me because I didn't credit it to the creator of this specific plank variation. I'm just gonna keep it at that, man. I mean, I think that says it all. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's like,
And then I went
guys.
back and credited him. I was like, hey, he created this plank in the comments and in the thing. And like, that's what people are more worried about than as if, can we help somebody by giving them this plank variation? And can we help the understanding comes? Who created it and not how well does it work? And explaining and making sure that's important, which happens a lot.
Yeah. I mean, the intentions and the creation of the internet was to decentralize news and information and the spread of it. And like you said, I think even people who have college educations and who, went through that liberal arts education of, going through the process of, arguing your points, relaying your points, expressing where your arguments came from. Where'd you go to school?
Boca High and then University of Central Florida, UCF.
UCF. But okay, you went through the college process and now you're still doing that with the scientific method through fitness and wellness training. And people are relying on you to constantly learn and to be able to give them the best positive thing. If anything, I think a lot of people are fake free market capitalists, but like, if anything, I have to continuously learn. I have to be able to put the best product out there for the individual that I'm going to be working with. And, even though I think the college education rate, like people who graduate with a degree is like only like 30, 33% of adults in our country. When you go back and think about that, it's like, that's still a small chunk of people who have been, had their feet to the fire. I'm sure you went for a degree in some kind of science. But like, even with history, it's like, okay, hey, you're going to be arguing this point. I'm writing 50-page papers, laying there, with footnotes. And I remember, and I use this point too, like, because like, I don't think a lot of people have had their feet held to the fire, say, hey, if this argument's not yours within six words or something, we're going to expel you. And they didn't expel people that much, but you had that like fear over your head that I need to make sure I'm putting in a good paper and a good point that expresses my own ideas. And again, it comes down to a lot of people can't think for themselves. They're just like, oh, I like that guy's opinion. I like that guy's take. And it's like, okay, that's an opinion. That might have nothing to do with basis of fact or theory, or did he test his opinion, and we're like you said,
The educational system is guiding us towards that because of the memorization, the emphasis on do you know the work instead of can you explain it? Can you think about it? What did you find that you disagreed with it? Again, our educational system, both in fitness and in school, in a lot of ways, is built to not have independent thinkers. And I think that's a huge problem, man.
Yeah. As much as the conspiracy theorists want to say, think for yourself, don't be a sheep. They don't actually think for themselves.
Sometimes, no, they don't. It's necessary, but it's also kind of hilarious in a way, also.
Yeah, my favorite is I'll sit there all day complaining about the news and media, but it's like you're doing the same exact thing, complaining about the news and media
Yeah.
and relaying the facts just for yourself, and you just make this whole little echo chamber of other people who think the same way you do. But it's, yeah, man, we're going to be there. We're going to be there. Punching people in the face, making sure they're looking at reality, getting a good dose of it, making sure they love reality, and they continue to improve their experience in life. I want to thank you so much again for hopping on the show with me. We can't have a 2-year break in between shows anymore.
Yeah, let's
So,
do it, man. I'm ready.
yeah, anytime, anything you want to come on the show, man,
Sure.
the bus door is open.
Awesome. I appreciate you. Thanks so much.
No problem. Please plug yourself away. Let people know where they can find you, where they can get in touch with your program, you yourself, and Yeah, wherever those people can connect with you, the best place to do that.
Yeah, so the first thing that you can do is follow on Instagram, which is going to be at Ian Marko. That's E-I-A-N, Ian, and then M-A-R-K-O-W. And then we also have our business account, which is at Marko Training Systems. YouTube's really good for a free resource if you're someone who's maybe kind of on that COVID budget and you just want to learn and kind of dive right in. YouTube's really great. You can just type Ian Marko in and pop right up. We'll link it too so that you can kind of get the cars routine that we talked about. If you're a coach, definitely hit me up and get into Mobility Coach Plus, which is going to be our online course. It includes two video calls with me, so I'll be talking to you soon. And then if you're someone who's just at home looking to really improve the way that they move, and our subscription, it's only $40 a month. And man, it's pretty premium. I'd like to say that we have the best content out there in terms of there's two views for everything. The audio is on point. The classes are both short and long, so you can really kind of adjust them to yourself. And it's called the Elite Video Membership, which again, we'll link for you. And if you have any questions, don't ever hesitate to reach out on any of the platforms. Just send me a message and we'll chop it up.
Guys, he's approachable and he is one of the best at what he does. His YouTube channel and Instagram page obviously are great places for free information and free sources to check out what he does, things he's working on, and things he's working on with his clients. He works with professional athletes. He works with athletes all across the spectrum, from amateur to professional. Go check out his stuff. Ian, thank you again for jumping on the show. Thank you, everybody, for tuning into the show. Go ahead, like, subscribe, whether it's on YouTube, if you're listening to this on the podcast app or Spotify. Go ahead and give us a subscribe. Leave us a 5-star review. Tell us how much you love this program. It helps people find this show. It helps us grow. And especially go check out a little bit more of the fitness and health shows that we've been doing over the past 2 to 3 months during this time of COVID. I've talked to people all across the space. There's some great information, great tidbits in there. Go check them out. Go connect with all my guests. The guests on these shows are open and ready to connect with you. They are an open book. And what else can you do to support this show? Yeah, share it. Help people, help spread the good word, the good gospel of the bus driver experience. And yeah, guys, that's it. You're either on the bus or off the bus. Get off my bus now. Have a good one.
The moves for those who